This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast, Marvel's Avengers Confidential, Black Widow and Punisher. Hey everybody, you're listening to another iFanboy special edition podcast. The Animation Brain Trust has assembled, and we're talking about Marvel's Avengers Confidential, Black Widow and Punisher. I am Paul Montgomery. That's Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And that's Ryan Haupt.
Hi.
Were you dead?
What happened?
I'm here.
All right. Did you pass out?
I don't know. I'm here.
Okay. Just making sure you weren't.
It's just the heat. It just got to me.
Ryan is in another area of the world.
I got to...
It's very hot. He's cataloging bones.
I got a case of the vapors.
It's funny that we said Brain Trust Assemble, because this is the first time that's sort of apt, as this is an Avengers film. Not only Avengers film, but I think, and Paul and I had this discussion last, I'm pretty sure this is the first Marvel film we've discussed with the Brain Trust. I don't think we actually did a Planet Hulk.
Ryan, did we talk about that?
We definitely didn't do a...
We did a book split on it, Paul.
Yeah, we did. I know we did a book split. We didn't do the animated movie that, you know.
I don't believe so.
No, we didn't. I don't think we did. I thought about it really.
I reviewed it on the website. You can go back and, yeah, but.
We also didn't do one in that Thor Wolverine one either. So this is the first Marvel, and many people have asked, when are you going to do a Marvel show? We said, well, once Marvel does a film, you know, in the same level or league as the DC films, we'll do it. And they put this one out. This is also, like the DC films, a PG-13 film. It's also a little bit longer, actually. It's almost an hour and a half.
It's about an hour and 23 minutes.
Yeah, it was.
Felt every minute of it. So this is Marvel, and this is... It's weird, because it's not really... I mean, obviously, it's playing on the popularity of the movie world. It's definitely in the comics world, which is becoming the movie world anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But interesting that they started off with a Black Widow and Punisher team-up film. And
well, in fairness, they did a Hulk Iron Man thing, which we didn't cover. But
was it a PG-13 branded thing too?
I don't know what it was rated, but it,
whatever.
It didn't get great reviews in advance of it coming out. So it's like, okay, we're not going to do that. So we did this one. This is directed by Kenichi Shimizu. The screenplay is by Mitsutaka Hirota, based on a story by Marjorie Liu. And I just want to, I got the Wikipedia page open. I just want to read this sentence. The film is produced by SHDTV AC BW&P Partners, another partnering of Marvel Entertainment with Sony Pictures Entertainment Japan and Madhouse, following up on the Marvel anime series. They did Wolverine stuff. They did an Iron Man anime. This is a full-fledged, you know, direct-to-video feature. And,
very anime influenced.
It's basically an anime. We've seen Marvel take cues from anime before in some of their stuff. We've seen DC take a little bit of influence,
especially with that Batman.
The Batman one that's made by anime, like animation houses, so that you could basically consider that an anime. This is an anime. They're like the pacing, a lot of the gestural stuff, and certainly the character designs are all
the action too.
Very much, yeah, anime style. And I would also say the tone, the very Eastern melodramatic tone.
Let's before we get into the details of it, let's just go over very, very, very quickly what the plot of the story was, in case you have not seen the film and are just listening to this and might be curious if this is a story you're interested
in.
Okay,
good. I'll need this.
and you can check my math on this one, guys, if I'm wrong, because I'm not entirely sure. Basically, it opens with the Punisher doing what the Punisher does, killing a lot of bad guys. And guns on the streets, and we find out that he's actually blown a SHIELD op. He's gone in, and SHIELD's been monitoring these people, so SHIELD abducts him, and then they pair him with the Black Widow for some unknown reason, and have him go off to fight Leviathan, which is a shadowy organization and responsible for these weapons being on the street. They've stolen SHIELD tech, and so that's basically the story. Black Widow and the Punisher go to take down Leviathan.
We go to various, I think, made-up Marvel countries.
And Madripoor as well.
Hong Kong and Madripoor is where it all culminates.
Yeah, so that's basically the story. Good night, folks. This was rough. I mean, it wasn't... I don't think it was bad, but... I got bored. I mean, I got
it's very
bored.
Dry. It's
very, very, very dry.
For a Punisher and Black Widow story thing, it's going to be high action and everything. It's more of a Black Widow story than it is a Punisher story. And in trying to do Cloak and Dagger stuff, it gets very, very dry. There's being used to the very short runs of the DC direct-to-video features, when we get that scene with the Punisher being debriefed by Nick Fury,
it was so long.
The sequence goes on. I was like, wow, they're really devoting a lot of time.
And normally I like it when, you know, stuff's given room to breathe, but I like it. I got up and made tea during this movie. I started checking my email. Like there was just long scenes of just talking about nothing that was compelling. And it has to be, if you're going to draw something out, it's got to be compelling or interesting or character building, but this was just long, drawn out stuff
Sort of the problem is that they go with a very taciturn Frank Castle.
I have that in my notes. The Punisher is a boring lead, and I don't know if it's a Punisher curse or what, but you know, you'd think similar to Batman, he's very, you know, quiet and brooding, but for some reason he's not compelling as a lead character, and he would just sort of grunt. And
they have to, they actually, I felt, had to cheat it a bit, because there are moments where he reacts to things, like when they break into the Leviathan sort of laboratory, and they're in that room overlooking these tubes of bio soldiers that they're working on, and he sees Kane from the beginning of the film. He has this very anime reaction. I mean, he doesn't have like a nosebleed or, you know, like anything like that. It's, you know, it's more of a Ninja Scroll kind of anime. It's very grim.
Do you think it was animated for Japanese dialogue?
I think
because there was some scenes where the lip syncing was just completely off.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, it's animation. It's never going to be exact, but there was a couple of, and they were on close ups. That's why I noticed it, where it was not even close.
Yeah, it's too bad, because I felt like Jennifer Carpenter could have been a pretty decent Black Widow, but the awkwardness of dubbing over the voiceover the way they did it, and it's not the way that DC handles their stuff with Andrea Romano. This feels very much like after the fact.
You didn't really get the performance.
It's not modeled behind the performance.
And I don't want to turn this into a complete DC versus Marvel.
Oh, no, yeah.
I don't need, but it's
just
it's
as a point of comparison.
Yeah, it's hard not to compare them, because we do these so much with the DC films. And, you know, DC's been doing it for 20 plus years, and they've got it down to science. And Andrea Romano's been doing it for 20 years, and she gets really compelling performances out of a lot of her actors. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And this was very sort of stiff. I don't know. Ryan, what did you think overall?
No, I mean, I haven't been speaking up much, because I agree with everything you guys have said so far, and that this was really long. It was a bit of a slog, and one of my notes was that it conversations interrupted by fights for which the stakes I wasn't quite sure of.
Mm-hmm.
That left me a bit wanting.
I just kept wondering why the Punisher. Like, I get Black Widow for sure. She's becoming a major character through the films, and she's probably a big part in Captain America. I get that, but why the Punisher?
There was a moment when I was like, why isn't this Hawkeye?
Right.
You know, because I think when people have been, you know, when they sort of denied the idea of doing a Black Widow solo film, like, what if it was like Black Widow and Hawkeye together? You know, like those two characters have a past.
Which makes sense, that pairing in the movies. Yeah. But.
And so, you know, why don't you do that?
I wonder if they were just trying to show off the fact they had the license back.
Maybe.
But it just was like, I kept wondering, why am I following the Punisher around in this story? It doesn't make any sense. He's not a compelling lead. It was weird. Before you get completely down on everything, I do want to mention two things I really liked about the film. One, I thought the action was pretty good. You know, when the fight scenes, I thought there was some really interesting choreography, and, you know, there was the anime influence, so you had the interesting angles and
character-appropriate action scenes.
Yeah, I thought it was, for the most part, I mean, I think, again, comparison's sake, I think DC does the action really well too, but I think this was a different kind of action.
Yes.
And I liked, for the most part, I liked the fight scenes, especially the Black Widow stuff. I think Black Widow's overall, I thought she was good. And I liked the fact that she was non-sexualized. You know, she has that cat suit, but it was always zipped all the way up to her chin.
Yeah, for the entire time. For the most part, when she's talking to Amadeus Cho, there's a scene where we're looking at Amadeus Cho through her cleavage.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
it was like, true. And it was weird. Like her boobs were stacked vertically. Like the left one was at the top of the frame.
The teenager that
yes, no, definitely
going nuts around her because she's a beautiful woman. But for the most part, I mean, that zipper never came down past her neck in the flashbacks. It wasn't, you know, I was kind of expecting it at certain points, but it never happened, which I thought was good. But I thought she was a good character. I would have much rather, if anything, a solo Black Widow film, I think, would have been more interesting than putting the Punisher in there.
I agree with that. I think also the Jennifer Carpenter of Dexter fame, while not doing a, you know, Scarlett Johansson impression, it still feels like the Marvel Cinematic Universe Black Widow. Because they've done animated features where she has, you know, the Russian accent and stuff.
I wish she had the Russian accent. That was just me, though.
Yeah, I kind of miss the accent.
It sets her apart, makes her interesting. But
I think anyway. It would be interesting if she, like, broke, like, because, you know, she is Russian. You know, that, like, the character does have a history, and I assume that voice is not her original.
Right, she's either adopted an American accent, or it's washed out of her, or whatever, or she can go in and out of it. But
so I thought I always thought it would be kind of interesting if she broke or something, you know, like if there was a moment.
Intense moments or emotional,
like,
moments.
Yeah, an emotional moment. Yeah. So, speaking,
or she like swore in Russian or something.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So speaking of emotional moments, I think the weirdest thread in this movie is her. Maybe boyfriend from S.H.I.E.L.D.,
Hold on.
Elias Stone.
Before we get into
it, I got a lot of notes on this.
Before this, I just want to make sure, Ryan, did you have anything you wanted to mention as what you enjoyed in the film?
Yeah. So there are a couple of things. I like that Punisher brands all of his phones with the Punisher skull. That was a nice touch.
Yeah.
Punisher brand phone. Maybe that's why they included Punisher, so I could start selling merch. I agree with you that the voice was really well done. I think Nick Fury also was that same sort of thing where not necessarily aping Sam Jackson, did a good job of capturing that same kind of mode of speaking, which was good. I loved that the Black Widow has a USB port in her costume. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. These male... I'll seem like little things, but that's what I'm
at. I like the tech
at this
costume
point.
A lot.
The way they played the tech I thought was really well. I liked the way that she selectively uses her Black Widow sting versus there's a scene where she like flips open a light console keyboard to type something and doesn't even look to type it. And that was really smooth. So like little touches like that are the things that stand out for me in a movie like this.
Mm-hmm. I guess I should also mention some other things that I liked. A lot of the bad guys in the end sequence.
I was psyched when Baron Zemo showed up.
Yeah, Baron
didn't
Zemo.
Do anything.
I thought that was kind of funny because he shows up and his only lines are "What a disappointment." And no,
it's
but
like,
I,
Zemo, and then he didn't go do anything, and I was sad again.
I also like they really scoured the depths for interesting villains. They had like who was in here? Orion is the main bad.
Well,
guy?
I made a list of the characters that I saw, and some of the villains I didn't get, so I didn't write them down. But on the villain side, you had Leviathan was the organization,
right?
Elias Starr is the would-be boyfriend who's Egghead in the Marvel Universe.
But he doesn't look like Egghead.
No, nothing. Graviton, Orion, Grim Reaper, and Baron Zemo. But on the hero side, I was surprised at the all the ones that showed up at the end but didn't say a word. The Punisher and Black Widow obviously were the main characters. Nick Fury and Maria Hill were the S.H.I.E.L.D. characters. Amadeus Cho, which was a surprise, yeah. Sort of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s resident teenage genius. The Hulk, Hawkeye,
Hulk
Iron
surprised
Man.
Me.
Hulk, Iron Man. Well, they were on the cover of the DVD. The Hulk... Hawkeye and Iron Man were on the and Thor and War Machine and Captain Marvel in her current mulleted mohawked get up.
She doesn't really wear the mask anymore in the comics, but yeah. So the mask
that was
is there.
That was a surprise. Even though I forgot they showed her in a promotional.
It's funny because they did put out a still a few weeks or months ago, and I saw that. I was like, oh, that's cool, and I completely forgot about it. So when Hulk showed up, I was expecting a villain, and then oh, hey, it's the Hulk.
It was very much Deus Ex Avengers.
Yeah, but isn't that the way that?
So let's talk about Elias Starr, aka Egghead, aka Black Widow's bizarre boyfriend character. The motivation is that Elias was a S.H.I.E.L.D. scientist who
he was
felt,
like Q, basically.
Yes, and he felt inadequate to be dating Black Widow because she's hanging around with Captain America and the Hawkeye and Iron Man and. What can he give to her that they can't? So he decided to strike out on his own, and he gets hooked up with the Leviathan organization, and he feeds them tech, and he becomes a bad guy. And it's all to show his love for Black Widow. And in my notes, I had got lame-o villain in love with Black Widow, and then right after that, I wrote lame-o love story. I just thought the whole love thing was laughable. And gravitas whatsoever to the story.
I noticed when they first fought, she's like doing something on the computer. She's not even paying attention. And then he basically is standing ominously on a ledge behind her and she jumps up there and they fight for a little bit. And then he takes the mask off and, you know, she's all upset. And he says, I didn't want this to be the way I had to tell you. And I'm like, well, you literally could have avoided her. she wasn't paying attention to you at all.
Yeah.
And then I also noticed that Nick Fury had a photo of him on his desk. And I'm
yes,
like, really?
Yes.
Really?
No,
Nick Fury's got a photo.
Like camp buddies. It was weird. It was, I mean, considering how important it was to the story, basically it's the main driver of the plot. His love for her drives him to do this evil stuff. It just felt bizarrely, you know, light. It didn't have, there was no weight to it.
They also sort of teased the idea that there's, you know, that great scene in the Avengers movie where she's talking to Loki and she's playing him the whole time and having these big, you know, sort of melodramatic reactions to everything he's saying. And then she flips a switch basically and shows that whatever he's saying isn't affecting her at all. She's been completely in control of the situation and she tricked him into giving away the plot. I thought that that's maybe where they were going to go here.
No,
there's one moment where she like knees him in the abdomen or something. And they launch into a very well choreographed fight, without speaking about it. And so I thought that they were maybe going to play with that at least, but no, she's actively, she feels for this guy. And when they get to that confrontation where she's almost going to fly over a ledge, and they end up like holding each other, I was like, this isn't,
yeah,
this is not, you know, imagine if this they were if they tried the same plot with, you know, Iron Man or Thor. It's such a dismissive way to look at a female hero, and it really bothered me because otherwise she's a, you know, a really great tactician, and she has wonderful action sequences. She has an interesting rapport with the Punisher. But it's just this weird, you know, soapy, sudsy, you know, subplot that
right.
takes on way too much of the film.
Yeah, and I think they ended up the length hurt it in that sense, and the pace hurt it. It went on. It felt so much longer than an hour and a half, and these movies shouldn't do that. I can't decide if it's a good. I mean, We're going to call this the first start because I don't know if that other film is by the same team or whatever it is. So we're just going to consider this a first start. And I guess it's okay for a first start, but and it's hard to compare because DC's been doing this for so long. They've got a team of people in place that they do it really well. They know what they're doing, and they crank them out like a well-oiled machine. So it's unfair to compare this to a movie that, you know, the latest DC film, because that's the culmination of 25 years of experience. But you know, it really stumbled out of the gate if this is their first start at this kind of thing.
I think it's that wonky aspect of the love story in the script. It's the weight distribution problem with Punisher and Black Widow. Not saying that Black Widow or that Punisher should be the lead.
No, but he didn't do anything. He was no reason to be there. He didn't do anything interesting. Yeah.
So it was.
Well, what happened with him is they kept like S.H.I.E.L.D. kept capturing him, be like, we're going to have to lock you up, Frank. And he's like, okay, I understand. And then they're like, Frank, we need you. But once you're done, we're going to have to lock you up. And he goes, I know. And then at the end, they're like, all right, Frank, we're going to let you go because we need you out there being the Punisher.
There was such basic problems, building block foundational problems in the film. I'm surprised they really didn't see those going into it. I wonder if it's a product of it being done by a Japanese anime company.
We also talk about, still with the DC movies, the computer animation when it's inserted into the traditional animation doesn't quite look right, and it was super jarring in this.
There's two instances, or I guess three instances of that. So the helicarrier is the first time you really notice it, right?
Yes, that was when I made the initial note and then
especially,
noticed it at least once other time.
Yeah, especially because there's such a stark background. The helicarrier, you know, rising up into the heavens, and it's just a really blank kind of canvas, and it's not a super detailed model of a helicarrier. It's just this gunmetal kind of blob going up into the sky. And then Iron Man is like CG, and it's weird. It's like it's this weird motion cap looking thing, and you know that there's something off about it. And then the other one is the big fight sequence. It looks like the background,
Like zooms out and pans around,
and it's literally like the floor is a wireframe. So it's just like, wait, they're doing weird stuff with the camera, and you see the Hulk running through, and it looks like when you're seeing previz stuff for like the Lord of the Rings, when they got like a million orcs, you know, going across a plane, it's like that. It doesn't look finished. That's the big thing. But I liked Orion though. He's pretty cool. That was a pretty cool design. And that's not a character that you see a whole lot.
Yeah. I was not very familiar with him at all. I didn't know who he was.
No, Griffin is the big sort of lion guy.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah.
Wings. Yeah.
I wonder what Marvel's plan is with these, because it's a real opportunity to tell stories and showcase characters that you're not going to get in the films. You're not going to get in the Netflix shows.
Egghead.
Well, I don't mean so much Egghead, but I'm thinking
more
Captain Marvel, people like that. And, you know, I wonder if this is how they're going to proceed. I guess sales will sell, but, you know, make a dedicated team like DC has that just does these films and does them well. And you know, because if another film comes out from the studio, I probably I'm not going to be interested in watching it. So I'm just going to preempt all the questions now. If another one comes out, I don't know that we're going to do this again, because I didn't really have fun watching it.
It's going to be a case-by-case thing. I don't know.
Yeah. And maybe they'll get better. I hope they get better, because I like, you know, I like these films in theory.
It looks really polished. I mean, the character models are
I like that.
Really strong. I think it's just it being this international, you know, collaboration, I think it was just a little bit awkward.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if you're a big fan of these characters and you're like a Marvel zombie, you'll probably enjoy it. So I would say if you like that thing, then you didn't watch it. If you like these characters, if you're a Black Widow fan, if you're a Punisher fan, but it didn't hold my attention very well. I think I missed some of the things because I was off making food.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching this knowing that I was going to do a podcast about it, and my attention would drift because, wow, this scene is going on for so long. Weird negotiation scene.
Like, oh God, we're only halfway through.
Yeah, and so I had to rewind it a little bit, and you know, but
yeah, so it's disappointment. Marvel's Avengers: Confidential Black Widow and Punisher.
it's a start. It's not the worst.
Yeah, I would. It's. I think it. I think in ways it is stronger than some of the DC things that we have talked about.
Yes.
Not most though.
Some, maybe one or two.
It's but it's more that it's just uneven and.
Well, it's uneven, and also the things that were bad about it were really glaringly bad. I don't know that there's ever been storytelling as bad as the love story stuff in any of the DC films.
Yeah, no, there hasn't been anything that bad. But it's not even just
character work. It's like there's no weight to this story because I've never met these characters before. You didn't set up the love story at the beginning so that when it's revealed, it's a shocker. You know, this guy is revealed, and I don't know who he is, so I don't really care that he's Black Widow's boyfriend because I've never met him before.
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't. Just think.
You didn't see the picture on Nick Fury's desk in the Avengers? It's in the movie. Joss Whedon's Marvel's The Avengers.
Right. So it's just
right there.
Stuff like that was really sort of basic storytelling techniques. It sort of, I thought, fell flat on. But, you know, the animation was pretty good for the most part. I liked seeing a lot of these characters. I thought the big giant Avengers fight scene at the end was fun for the most part. So there's stuff here to work with. I'd like to see more of these characters appear. You know, some of these are side characters, do some more of that stuff. But, you know, I can't wholeheartedly recommend this film, unfortunately.
I would.
Usually when we do the DC ones, they've already announced what the next one is. Do we know what the next one might be?
I don't know if this is a planned series or what. I don't know anything about it. But.
What do we want? What do we want to see?
Do you want to see original things or do you want to see adaptations of?
I just think original because that's the real opportunity with these Marvel. Because
I agree with
Marvel
that.
Puts out 3 films a year. So show me some of these Avengers that aren't going to get first billing on the films doing stuff. You know, because adaptations are going to tend to focus on Cap and Iron Man and people that I'm going to see in these movies, as opposed to Captain Marvel or Black Widow or War Machine. You know, I don't know exactly what the rights issues are, but show me some characters maybe that I'm not going to get to see live actioned, perhaps, depending on what they.
Yeah, that's kind of the cool thing with, like, say, like last year I played a bunch of that Lego Marvel Universe game, and you get to be, you know, the Fantastic Four with Spider-Man and with the X-Men and with the Avengers, and it's something that we're sadly not going to get to see.
Yeah, and I don't know because I don't know how this classifies. Licensing issues are very complicated and very specific,
right.
Having worked in licensing at one point in my life. So because, you know, if you look back at the cartoons, the Marvel's Avengers, not the Avengers Assemble one, but Earth's Mightiest Heroes, they had appearances from the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and Wolverine. So I don't know if that means they can use them in these films or not. I don't know if these are considered films or TV shows because that'll make a difference. So I don't know. But, you know, play around in those worlds. We're not going to see, you know, every summer. On the screen.
Well, when they did.
You know the storyline that I don't think we're going to get in the movies that I think would be really fun?
What?
Marvel Zombies.
I could see them doing that. I think when they had Deadpool in that Hulk versus
right.
double feature, that was pretty interesting. They had a pretty good handle on Deadpool. And that's an example of.
Yeah, exactly. A character like that.
A character like that. And that's also an example of a feature where they mix, you know, Wolverine and the Hulk and
you're right,
Thor.
You're right.
They're all in there. And that wasn't too long ago. There's got to be some interesting flow charts on, you know, just exactly how all that. We should ask Charles Soule because he's a lawyer. He probably knows this stuff.
Well, we'll see. If there's another one, as we said, we'll decide.
Case by case.
We're definitely not going to make any guarantees on whether or not we're going to watch the next Marvel animated film. If it looks interesting, perhaps. But we'll be back again for the next DC film, Batman and Son, although not too looking forward to that one. But we'll see.
Our verdict on this one, I think, is I wouldn't even say necessarily a rental unless you're really
if you're really into the characters. Really into Marvel, then rent it.
But I would say it'll probably be on Netflix eventually.
Right. And when you get to the briefing scene in the beginning, you just fast forward for the next 15 minutes because that'll just be a lot of talking around a table.
Oh, man. There you go. So
yeah.
If you're really into two people punching at each other and their fists hit perfectly and push against it, and this is
that was a little weird.
And then they pause to react how crazy that is.
It happened multiple times, too.
It's a big anime thing, yeah.
It wasn't a one-time
thing. All right, so that is, let me say the title again. That is Marvel's Avengers Confidential Black Widow and Punisher, Part 1, Men and X-Men.
comment on that film at ifanboy.com and you tell us if you what you saw thought of it, if you saw it as well. I've seen no chatter about this anywhere. Yeah. So we'll see. But if you saw it, tell us what you thought in the comment section. And if not, you know, hang on tight. We'll be back soon enough for the next DC animated original film.
And until then, questions or comments, send those along to contact@ifanboy.com. And don't forget, each and every Sunday, the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, where we talk about all of our favorite comics that week.
All right. So until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Ryan.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.